Welcome to the BMX News Announcers Tower podcast. I'm Mike Carruth. Back on May 28th, news reported the story of big-time industry player Western Power Sports and their decision to pull out of the wholesale BMX parts and accessories distribution game, something they had been into for a good long time. One of the sources we interviewed in that story for background on the whole situation was JD Cycle Supply President Jeff DeVito. We thought it'd be a great idea to bring Jeff back on and onto the Announcers Tower program to hear how things have been going in the past 60 days, now that that news is out in the world, and to get a general BMX industry radio check, and it also happens to be our 150th episode. So, Jeff, thanks for joining us today, and welcome to the show.
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me on, Mike.
Appreciate it. You know, before we get too deep into the current condition, can you give our listeners some background on yourself and JD Cycle Supply and your time in the BMX industry as a whole?
Well, I started, my BMX, career back in like 1978, 1979 as a teenager racing and, raced in the amateur ranks, a short time in the pro ranks, and I switched over to, cruiser racing and stuff. Around 86, I got hired by MCS Bicycles to, run their, work in their sales department. And then, I think it was around 91, they were going out and, I'd had an opportunity to buy the business. At the time I wanted to, not just sell MCS stuff. I wanted to turn it into a distribution company. And I started very successful for 24 years, Custom Cycle Supply. Obviously things changed in the BMX world 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. Kind of took a little bit of a downturn and our overhead was just too high. And the current business plan that had worked for years for us, it was time to shut it down and restart with a completely different business model. So we got rid of complete bikes and frames, and we now just concentrate on parts and accessories for MCS and the stuff that we're distributing. Also my kids raced for years too. So as somebody who talks BMX to dealers constantly, I have a knowledge of all levels of BMX, little kid BMX, myself as a rider, stuff like that. So that kind of helps on the phone a lot.
Yeah, I'll bet for sure. So you were one of the people that was quoted in the article that we did on WPS exiting the BMX parts and accessories business. So I'm sure when you first heard that, it was probably a big, Yahoo moment, but also maybe a little not so much because, it just means that someone's exiting the business and that prompts a lot of talk that, hey, like the big player's bailing and that can't be very confidence inspiring. So tell us about how the past 60 days have been for you and for, JD Cycle Supply and also, how the temperature. I mean, let's not get into every question in one, but let's just start with that one. How's the past 60 days been, and how's it affected your business?
Tiring, to say the least. I've been putting in a lot of late night hours, weekend hours. We've been basically playing Tetris in the warehouse, trying to add more shelving for all the new inventory we got coming in. And it was basically just a complete change of direction for us, but we definitely had to change direction. We've had nothing but success with JD Cycle Supply, growth every year, and but we were in a lot of categories. We were in racing. We were also into, some freestyle street stuff, and we were having a lot of success with retro BMX. And this kind of changed direction to us where we were like, wow, this is a great opportunity for us. And we're going to have to put more focus back on racing, which is actually my love. And so to me, that was like a no-brainer. It was very easy to jump into that. And then Yeah, we've just, if you pay attention to our Facebook page, boy, we've just been having mountains and mountains of inventory pouring in here, and it goes out of here just as fast. We actually had our best month in business in July.
Wow.
So it's been very
congratulations.
Busy.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
So, are you at liberty, I'm sure you are, to say what brands you you have added, and then maybe just give us a quick rundown on the brands that you carry in general?
Sure. The first guy who called me, I mean, literally the day after the article hit, was Renan. George called me, and it was a thing where he's like, hey, Western Power Sports was our biggest customer. We need somebody new. And we talked and worked something out. So we've had two shipments of Renan come in. We're starting with 4-bolt chain rings in several decimal sizes and solid sizes, and we're going to just slowly add. We'll probably eventually work into the 5-bolts and stuff. Some of his products we're not able to carry. There's just not enough distributor margin, so he goes direct on those, especially that I asked him just the other day about those new stems after listening to your podcast with him.
Right.
And his bottom racket, which looked really cool. But I think that's going to end up being something bike shops are going to have to go direct on him just because the distributor margin is not there. We've also picked up Turn 3 Racing. I don't think Western Power Sports carried that line, but they make some really interesting stuff for little kids. They make some tiny cranks all the way down to like an 85 millimeter and up to, I think, 130. They also make an interesting tire that is a 18 by 1 3/8 tire that is great for that kid coming off the Strider bike that needs some stability and just learning how to ride a micro. Sometimes those 18 by ones are you come off a fat tire 12 inch or 16 inch bike or a Strider bike, and you jump on that skinny tire, it's a little wobbly for the first few months. So this is a great tire just to start with. We've made a huge commitment to Box. They actually flew out here and talked to me right after this happened, and we sat down, and we are pretty much committed to carrying the 100% of the Box line. We're also stepping up Tangent, which we carried both Box and Tangent in the past, but we're bringing in a lot more product from both of those brands. And same thing with a lot of the other companies that we carry. I mean, we're a huge profile distributor, probably one of the biggest. We also do, Amy grips, ODI grips, Token products, Sun Rims, Alienation. Boy, the list goes on and on of all the different stuff, Snafu stuff, Hyper stuff, wow. Rift frames, things like that. So Paul's great, a lot of stuff.
Yeah, so aside from Tangent, pretty much every BMX News advertiser. So shout out to those guys. That's awesome. It just happens to be that way, just a coincidence, those smart, forward-thinking brands. Hey, so by the way, I just want to mention to the listener, it's not too often that we do an industry-focused or an industry-directed show. This one I thought was a good one because, number one, it kind of points in the direction of changing industry tides, and that's important for everybody to know and understand. And also, in the event that there are some dealers out there listening that are interested in finding a new source for all this amazing product, I thought that it would be a help to bring you on and to kind of talk a little about some of that behind the scenes stuff, and that way give everyone a little idea of how the industry is faring these days. So. Did you have anything else to add on that other topic, or can I move on?
Sure, you can move on.
One of the things that we talk about a lot is dealers and support the local bike shop and stuff. And in many cases, there really isn't a local bike shop to support. Or if there is, it's like in my hometown, we have a local bike shop here, but they really don't have any interest in BMX or the BMX customer whatsoever. Like, they wouldn't even order an inner tube for me. So how many stocking dealers would you say are there in, for BMX racing in the United States? And what I mean by stocking dealer is, like, you know, a dealer, you can walk in and say, hey, I need a, you know, a 43 chain wheel in black, and they're going to go in the back and pull it out for you. So how many would you say that there are dealers like that?
Well, I don't know if I can break it down 100% into BMX racing, because we also do some freestyle here. We have 1,200 dealers in our database. Now, obviously not all of those guys are, you know, repeat customers, you know, ordering every month, but I would say we have close to 400 dealers that order from us on a pretty regular basis. Now, if they're going to, it's almost impossible for a shop to have everything. It's just, you know, and they just can't, you know, it's a lot of money to stock all that stuff. And they've also got a lot of competition going on with, you know, a lot of online sales and stuff like that. But there's been a lot of problems with bike shops wanting to carry BMX in the past because of, and you know what, I'll say it, and I might take a little heat for this, but the coupon codes are one of the main things that have been responsible for really hurting the industry.
That's gotten better lately, though, right?
Yes, it has gotten better. We won't mention names, but you know, I love all my dealers, but it's a thing where, you know, I was talking to bike shops that, man, the bike shop owner may be used to race. He has passion for BMX, and he had to stop selling BMX stuff because he could not compete. Every day, a kid would shove the phone in his face and said, hey, can you match this price? And he was like, wow, you know, I mean, how can I match that price? It's like, I'm making nothing. So that has gotten better. But one of the things that has helped BMX, and that when that happened, Mike, a lot of shops just kind of gave up. And if, you know, we lost all of our recruiters for BMX,
right,
you know?
Right.
And, yep. And look what it did to some of the big players. It really hurt some of the big players out there too, that were doing this. So
when did that faith, when was that faith lost? Was that at the kind of the dawn of the internet era? Because I mean, like in my day,
no.
it was before that, or it was most more recent than that, as far as like the onset of the coupon codes and the bro deals and stuff. You know, when did the market get tainted to the point where these guys are just like, it's radioactive, I'm not touching it?
With not knowing exact dates, I would take a wild guess to say it was about 10 years ago, but it didn't really hit till about, I think it took about 4 or 5 years to isolate the dealer from BMX. And everything was great. All these guys were making all this money. You know, but so they were taking more money away from the bike shop. But what they didn't realize was, like I said before, we were losing the recruiters. And by losing the recruiters, that means when the dad walks in with his kid, or a kid walks in and there's no BMX bikes, no nothing, you know, we can't get new members in. Well, guess what? The sport got smaller. There wasn't as many participants, and these, you know, places that were selling cheaper, all of a sudden now, 5, 6, 7 years later of doing this, there's not as many customers, but their overhead was massive. Well, it affected not only those guys, but it affected the manufacturers, the distributors, everybody else, because we all had these high overheads. We were living, you know, large, and all of a sudden those business models didn't work. And I recognize that, early on, I was kind of forced to recognize it too, because just the way sales were going, we were like, this just doesn't work. We have to close it down.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, rethink this thing and let's try to do this with, you know, lower overhead, less staff, all that.
So, yeah. And there's a few questions in there that I want to follow up on. And the one is about, the recruiters, because I think that is spot on. And it's super important, because all through the 80s, the golden age of BMX, you know, you had this, this national infrastructure of Schwinn dealers and independents as well. But the Schwinn dealers were driving it as far as they had a national sales strategy, a national infrastructure for buying and for bringing stuff on board. And those other local dealers, you know, had to sort of keep up because they wanted to compete. And so that was, to me, that was how I was turned on to BMX, was through a local dealer. And that dealer, every Sunday morning that there was a race, he would offer us to meet him in the back of the shop at 7:30 or whatever, and we'd load up his pickup, and he would take us out to the races, you know. And it's like, that was huge for us local neighborhood kids whose parents worked on the weekend or didn't have a car or whatever. And so that was, you know, that was a huge opportunity and something that we don't have any longer with the national network of Schwinn dealers. And then, of course, it's just not all that important to compete. And unfortunately, what tends to happen then is a phenomenon that I've seen in personally in my running of the BMX League program, which is that a family goes into a local bike shop and they don't stock BMX. And so the sales guy on the floor needs to, you know, his job is to make a sale. And so he gets to work trying to chip away at their resolve to buy a BMX bike and start selling them into buying this mountain bike over here, because he's going to get a lot more use out of that than he is some BMX bike. And so that worries me a lot. And I'm sure that's something that you wouldn't want to venture a guess on, because obviously the dealers you'd work with are, you know, they're BMX people just by definition, because they're buying from you. So in any event, I don't know any response to that, but I do, you know, I think it's important for the listener to understand that, you know, whether, and I don't know that it gets fixed. I don't know that we can actually lure those, you know, dealers who aren't hearing it, if we can lure them back into the fold or not. What do you think?
There's some really good news that I talked about, kind of some doom and gloom from about 6-7 years ago, but I can tell you about some good news that's happened in the last several years. You know, I've heard a lot of people say, you know, oh, you know, this company's doing this or that company's doing this, and things for BMX look bad. Things are not looking that bad for BMX. Even before the Western Power Sports thing happened, we have shown nothing but growth here. So what has happened is bike shops exited from BMX, say, however many years ago, 6-7 years ago. But a phenomenon happened, and I will give Todd Lyons a nice shout out to that. He started this whole bike life thing with these 26 and 29 inch BMX bikes. Well, there's two crowds. There's the wheelie crowd, which is a younger crowd, which got people on bikes. It might not, those kids might not have ever raced before, or even would have thought about racing, or even freestyle or anything like that. But what it did was allowed the bike shops to want to carry BMX. The other side of it is the old guys, 40, 50 years old, that grew up on BMX bikes, don't want to ride a mountain bike, me personally. And it's a thing where I want to ride a BMX bike. So you get on a 26, you get on a 29. Well, these guys have money now. So now they want to put retro stuff on it. They want to put the coolest stuff on it, you know, Paul's brakes and this and that. I want all this blingy stuff. Well, the bike shop starts bringing in all the big bike stuff, but a lot of the regular BMX stuff crosses over. So they found me and probably some other distributors out there, and they started stocking BMX to some degree, but kind of catering to the bigger bike. But what happened was a kid would walk in and go, oh, wow, you guys have a set of profile cranks. But you got grips again. You really have a BMX stem, you know, where this kid has walked into this bike shop a couple times periodically and there's been nothing. Well, now they've got some of these big bikes and some BMX componentry. So the regular BMX kid who races, freestyles or whatever is saying, hey, can you get me this or can you get me that? Well, the bike shop's like, well, you know what? I have a source for that now. And I'm ordering from those guys regularly. So, yeah, sure, I'll order that 44 profile Imperial gear for you or whatever it is. And so now the bike shop's discovering, hey, we can start selling BMX. And what has happened with some of the mail orders has also helped because there's less gorilla in the room, I guess. And that has helped too. So it was kind of like perfect timing for everything to come back to bike shops for the first time in many years for them to give it a chance. And boy, I had at Custom, we had 2,500 dealers. Oh, it's amazing how many dealers have contacted me in the last 2 years out of the blue and been like, hey man, we're kind of starting to do BMX again. And I see you've got some of this retro stuff and then you've got this other stuff. And I'm, as a salesman, I try to get in some regular BMX stuff. Hey, do you have a track in your area? Yeah, we got a track. Why don't you just put in a couple number plates and just see what happens? And sure enough, they sell them. They call me back next month. And instead of ordering two number plates, they now ordered one of every color. Wow. And it's, they found out that, hey, we can sell this stuff if we actually stock it.
Nice. That's awesome. That's a great, that's a great story. So one of the other questions I had was relative to trackside vendors. Like, is that something that you, do you get into? Do you serve those guys? Or, cause I mean, I think that a lot of, maybe not a lot, but I think there are BMX brand, whether it's a brand or a distributor who sort of, you know, they hold out for the great pumpkin of BMX industry, which is that, you know, the full line dealer who's going to stock his pegboards with lots and lots of SKUs. And I don't know that that's happening all that much anymore. You know, I grew up with Sundance Cycle as my local dealer, and they had mm-hmm. every BMX part under the sun in every color, in every size. And it was literally, I mean, like, and then there was Rockville BMX on the East Coast and, you know, of course, many on the West Coast, but that kind of dealer doesn't exist anymore. Do they?
They are out there. Shout out to my good friend, Andy over at Chippendale. I don't want to name too many others.
Yeah, right.
Because I'm going to skip somebody. And yes, no, there still are some of those shops out there.
But trackside vendors, like, do you we don't want your business, or do you serve them?
No, we always had to individually look at each one. You know, we have strict rules with that. To say that we will never sell to a vendor as a BMX distributor is kind of ridiculous, because it's probably a good 30% of all retail sales, you know, in BMX, if I had to take a guess. But so Western Power Sports did it. We did it. But we're not going to sell to a guy selling, you know, with a catalog out of the back of his pickup truck. You know, if a guy has got a trailer and if he's not upsetting any other, if there's no shops in the area with, you know, however many miles, what harm is he doing? He's creating a service. And a lot of these guys become legit. I've had some trailered vendors actually start opening up bike shops. That's just the way that they got started. But there is a need for a vendor at a race. You know, you have a flat, you have a, you know, you break something at the race. Well, it's, if they're racing Friday night, there's no bike shops open. So you go to the vendor. A lot of the bike shops now don't vend. So it's usually, somebody that, you know, has bought himself a 20-foot trailer and is vending, you know,
right.
But, we also enforce that, a very strict, rule that if, you know, we find you guys are discounting, if you guys are selling below MAP pricing, boy, that's the fastest way to get cut off. And I tell these guys right away, especially in the last, since this whole Western Power Sports, we've opened up over 50 new dealers, and some of them are vendors, and we've told them, hey, look, if I get any complaints about you undercutting, that's a good way to get cut off.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting. So we keep hearing, like, I mean, out on the internet, there, you know, the Facebook forums and so forth, we keep hearing that the BMX industry is in dire straits and, you know, we should, the hair is on fire. And, you know, there are, and the reality is there are more than 80 frame brands in the marketplace that we can point to that, you know, for whatever reason, you know, someone decided they were going to, they wanted to have a bike company today, and it was like just like having a, you know, a club and a clubhouse. And, you know, but the point is that, you know, you can't even point to a place where, you know, an interested customer could go and purchase one of these, you know, these frames. Not all of them, of course. I mean, there's a few dozen probably that are actually legit, you know, brands that you could go and buy, you know, whether it's direct online or through a dealer. But, you know, what's your feeling about that, you know, the oversaturation of brands out there in the frame space? And also, what, you know, what is the true temperature out there as far as, you know, the sales of BMX product?
Well, okay. Even before Western Power Sports, I'll issue this in a couple different parts because it's kind of a couple questions in one. Out of all the categories right now, let's take, let's just categorize it as freestyle, meaning dirt and street, the retro and the racing. In 2019, my freestyle sales have been flat. My retro sales have slowed. Last year, it was insane. I think we kind of filled the pipeline and with the issues that SE had, you know, recovering right now and getting bikes in back again, that might actually pick that category back up.
And but for the, and let, me seen, let me pause you there for the listener. That was that they had an ownership change, and so there was a point in time where they stopped shipping bikes to the U.S. while the ownership change was underway, and now they're rolling strong again. Is that right?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Great.
Sorry and, to interrupt. But race, no problem. But racing is actually the one area. Even before this Western Power Sports for JD Cycle Supply, we have seen growth. And it's kind of strange because we actually had a very wet spring and hot summer. But I would say 80% of the dealers that I talk to have told me that their local racing moto count is up this year. And I'm not talking about it went from, you know, 10 motos to 30 motos, but it went from, you know, maybe 10 motos to 15 motos. And they are seeing a lot of new beginners and stuff coming in. Plus, we had a boom in the 90s for BMX racing, if I'm sure you remember.
I don't actually. That was my dark ages. I was out of BMX from 88 to 2008. Oh. So go ahead and preach on.
It thrived in the 80s, and then we had another boom in the 90s. Well, guess what? Those guys are now about 35 years old. And if you go to almost any track and you look at that 5-6-year-old kid on the gate, there's a whole lot of last names on back of jerseys that you recognize.
Right.
So that's, it's almost, that happened. That was one of the things that created the boom of the 90s was all the 70, 80s guys that had kids, myself included. I mean, I was one racer, but guess what? I brought two racers into the world. And so now there was three of us out there every weekend racing. And that has definitely, we're starting to see a little bit of that. Plus, there's a lot of new programs out there, you know, that are going on, that's happening. And obviously, some tracks are, you know, do a better job at promoting their tracks than others, you know. But so that's that. The other question was about, you know, the frames and all this kind of stuff. The oversaturation. Frames is a tricky thing. The problem is, you know, any person out there that, you know, got an inheritance of $20,000, $25,000 can, hey, I'm going to own my own bike company and, you know, get us one batch or two batches of frames made or something. And all of a sudden he's got a bike company thing.
Right.
You know, the problem is there's too many frames, too many sizes, too many color choices. So no matter what the bike shop brings in, you could bring in, let's bring in a red XL from some brand. Well, you know, you're going to invest $300 or $400 into a frame, and then you know, the kid wants a pro, or he wants a blue one. So, you know, by the time it takes you that long to sell that frame, it's an old model. Nobody wants it. Now you got to discount it. So the bike shops special order frames. There's very few shops that will stock frames. They will stock number plates. They will stock cranks. They will stock grips, cables, things like that. But there's too many choices in the frames. And so that's the reason behind, you know, the bike shops not stocking frames.
Right on. Yeah. 16 sizes deep, you know, is kind of where we're at now, I think, right? I mean, it's crazy.
It's ridiculous, you know. Yeah, it's, you know, the industry sometimes has a way of correcting itself. I mean, there was a time when I think we had about 6 or 7 different size seat posts. It was like, come on, guys, can't we just pick a size, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I think we recently went through about 10 sizes of bottom brackets, you know, and it can get crazy, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So when you're out there, and I assume that one of the things you do all day is you're on the phone, you personally, I mean, you have a sales staff, but you also are in the trenches, you know, smiling and dialing, right?
Yeah, we just actually hired another salesperson. Actually, his first week has been this week, and his new computer will be here installed tomorrow. His name is Sean. He used to work for me when he was younger at Custom Cycle, and he's ex-racer and stuff. His kids ride, and he's pretty knowledgeable. And we also have Juan here, who does a lot of our Latin South America sales and things like that. So that works out. It's been, for the last month or two, not as much pounding from me. It's been more like just receiving calls.
Yeah, sure.
The inbound has been pretty insane. And, you know, you hang the phone up and you got 3 emails. You got a Facebook messenger order. You got one waiting. It's kind of nuts.
So I guess that's the difference, right? Where that's the difference between now and when, you know, your MCS days back in the late 80s, where you had a giant book of clients and dealers.
Yeah.
And you just page, and you try to make as many calls as possible. And now there's so many different ways for people to reach out to you. That, you know, that's I'm sure that's great, but at the same time presents its own challenges, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, we get 10 o'clock at night, you know, dealers asking you questions while you're trying to watch a movie. It's like, right. You know, now there's a million ways to get a hold of somebody. And, you know, back in the day, there was one way. You picked up the phone and made the call. I had with all these new dealers that we have picked up, I still like to call. I you know, it's I'm passionate about BMX, and I love to talk to people about BMX because a lot of times they're passionate about BMX. And what I've told these new dealers that we, you know, these 50 new guys that we have recently picked up, I said, look, you guys could place online orders. We've set you up. You know, you've logged into the website. I said, but please actually, for a little while at least, call in your orders. I said, I want to build a rapport with you. I said, the way I look at it is we are both partners in business. I don't want to sell you a bunch of closeout junk. I want to sell you things that I know will sell in your store. And then when I call you back next month, it moved. So if I know about your clientele and I know what you have in your area, whether it's a skate park, BMX track, you got, you know, saturated with wheelie kids, whatever it is. If I learn about that, or if you're specialized in mini stuff, sometimes we get in limited edition quantities of stuff. And I'm like, oh man, we just got all these really tricked little mini something in. And who do I know that would want this stuff right away? And I would call those guys because I have a rapport with them and I've learned their business. So it's very important in the beginning to call in, and for me and or any of my sales staff, to build a rapport with that bike shop.
Right, for sure. Well, the reason I asked that question was to kind of set the table for this next question, which is, you know, as far as opening up new dealers. And so one of the kind of the tough nuts to crack is those mainline bike shops. They're, you know, they might do a whole bunch of business in road or mountain bike, but they're really not doing the BMX stuff. And like you said, there are those dealers who have kind of come around by way of the bike life movement and stuff. But so when you're out there, you know, you're cold calling, you're out there, you know, trying to open up new ground. How is it that those overtures are met? I mean, are they somewhat receptive? Are they hanging up on you? What's the feedback?
You get a mix. I mean, you get some guys that just completely hate BMX. I mean, you know, it's and you know, if you don't know you're calling a road bike shop, and you know the owner or the person, the buyer, just can't deal with kids and stuff like that, you know, they can sometimes even be rude, you know, and hang up on you. You know, I try to be very pleasant and nice when I talk to them. And, you know, with all the years experience that I have, you know, I don't come across like, yo, man, we're the BMX guy. You know, that's not me.
Right, so, right.
And, yeah. So, you know, if you give them professional courtesy, hopefully at least they will listen to you a little bit. But we have certain items that we sell that are really good lead-in items to a shop that, like, they would go, wow, we could probably sell that. Like, our number one lead-in item has been our MCS Lightning cables. We have these chrome-plated brake cables in multiple colors, like, you know, chrome red, chrome blue, chrome gold. And then we have like a black and chrome checkerboard one. And these things retail for like $6. So the bikes, I think I showed them to you at the CABDA show.
Yes, sir.
And, but the bike shops are like, wow, these are really cool. Well, it's not a BMX cable. It's a bicycle cable. And they can sell them, you know? So it's like a lot of them just like, you know what, let me start a little order. And, you know, so they do stuff like that. I've got some shops that are mountain bike and road bike shops that buy titanium spokes for me, because we're like the only guy that has titanium spokes.
Wow. Nice. That's awesome. Well, whatever it takes, right? You know, I mean, just just priming the pump, one little order, and who knows what's next, right?
Yeah.
So we've got just a few more minutes before we got to wind down the segment, but I definitely want to get in this final couple of questions. And, you know, one of them is just regarding the challenges that the BMX racing market faces. And that could be anything from things that happen on the sales floor to things that happen out at the track, what have you. So I'd love to hear your take on that. Just the top three challenges, and then we'll follow up on that with some of the possible fixes, because we want to try and be all about solutions here.
Well, exposure is probably one of them. You know, as far as BMX racing goes, you know, today's world, you think BMX, a lot of times you're thinking, you know, X Games type stuff on that maybe you've seen on TV, not as much on TV as it used to be, but you know, you're thinking that, but think about what they're seeing. You know, they're, even if they watch the Olympics, think about being a 10-year-old kid and watching, you know, somebody going down one of these massive hills, flying over these massive jumps, or they're watching a freestyle street event and these guys are doing double backflips and all this crazy stuff. The kid's like, there's no way I can do that. Right. So we need exposure of the sport, for one, but the sport is also, that brings up another thing of just how difficult some of today's tracks are, and things like that. It's a whole nother thing. I mean, these kids are now racing on soil tack. There's 80 million jumps on a track. Some of these starting hills are very high. And as a 10-year-old, 8-year-old kid starting out, you know, his dad might have raced, and he brings him out to the track and says, hey, go down. This kid falls once or twice, and he doesn't want to tell his dad he's scared. He just, you know, dad, I like soccer better and stuff.
Right.
And I'm not saying that we need to just totally tone everything down, but there needs to be a happy medium. Without beginners coming in and being feel secure and safe. I think this whole flat pedal thing is going to actually help for the 12 and unders. I think that's going to actually be a good thing. I know some people might disagree with me, but I think it's a good thing. And, you know, if the tracks were a little safer, the kid felt safer, I think you would also retain that kid a little longer. So if a track is only pulling 10 motos and a 10-year-old is being combined with a 13-year-old all the time, he gets discouraged that way. But absolutely, if you retain the kid because he's having fun, he feels safe on the track, that kid stays around a little longer. And before you know, you got a 10-year-old class, you got an 11-year-old class, a 12-year-old class. So now they're not racing out of class. And that makes it more fun. I mean, how fun can it be if you're 8 years old and you're having to race an 11-year-old every time you go out to the track? And how many more times is dad going to want to drag you out there knowing that you're going to be getting, you know, second or third place out of two or three kids? Yep. Because you're racing out of class.
And no fun. So that's the other exactly thing. So, okay. So exposure and then tracks. Was that number two?
Yeah. I would say that, I would say that, you know, the tracks are number two. You know, there's just the one thing that we can't, you know, I don't think change too much is the kids just have so many options. It's never going to be the 80s or 90s again. I mean, because the internet, I mean, every kid's got a screen in front of him. You know, there's too many options today and stuff like this. But I do think that the tracks, you know, could do more. Our local track, the Oakley BMX track, just recently went to a fair, and I saw this. They posted it on their Facebook page, and it was a thing where they did. They had like 1,200 or 1,300 riders ride a BMX bike. They had some donated BMX bikes, and they had it set up a course at a fairgrounds. And one day, like 1,200 kids rode around this, got information on the BMX track, and think about that. If we retain 10% of those kids, that's 20 more motos.
yeah, for sure.
That's the kind of stuff that needs to happen. Yeah. I mean, schools are tough to get into nowadays, but track directors, man, get your Boy Scouts out there. Get your bike shops involved. You brought up the bike shops, Mike, and it's a thing where why can't when you go to a bike shop, I'll call bike shops, say, hey, you got to track down this street. He goes, yeah, we got to track down the street. I have no idea when they race or anything. The track director, anybody on the board, has never even come by here and told us anything. He says, we'd be more than happy to hand out flyers for them and stuff like that, but they don't reach out to the bike shops.
Right. Yeah, no doubt. So that was that a was that number three? Which
I guess that would be number three.
What would we call that?
Maybe outreach? Lack of promotion.
Okay.
Yeah, outreach. Yeah.
So as far as the solutions to some of that stuff, I mean, obviously on the exposure side, there's a lot we could do, you know, and so what are mm-hmm. some of your ideas on that? Like, I mean, where and how can we, you know, knowing, of course, that our target customer, you know, bottom line is 10 and under. It's not, I mean, mm-hmm. I think that it's not what a lot of people think. And historically in BMX, we've always tried to go after the 13.6-year-old or whatever, who was the kind of the median age. But really today it's 10 and under. Mom and dad are making the decisions. And so in terms of that exposure, what are some of the solutions to that?
You know, if somehow we could get, I don't know, USA BMX or local programs or something like this to somehow get involved with any type of television coverage where it's targeted, like it's on a Nickelodeon, it's on a, you know, a kid friendly cable base, you know, something like that. You know, sometimes you go to the movie theaters, especially some of the older theaters that still have, like, you know, advertisements before the thing. Why not advertise there, you know, and be like, hey, local BMX track in your community with a really cool action shot or a video clip or something like that. How much could that really cost, you know, to do things like that to get people out to the local track and try? There's a ton of things that have been tried in the past, I believe, that aren't being done anymore. I mean, we used to have a local beginner series amongst three tracks down here in Florida. It was the Coral Springs track, the West Palm track, and the Miami track. And they did a series just for beginners in the off season, where it was a 10 race series, I think. And you got a number plate. It wasn't the state season or anything like that, but it was designed just for the beginner kids to chase points. What it did was it allowed the kids to venture off to a different track, and who they would have probably just stayed at their home local track, but they had to drive 45 minutes one way or 30 minutes another way. And they discovered there was more than just one BMX track. And all of a sudden that helped moto counts at all the tracks. And it was a good thing, but that's some of the ideas, but yeah. I'm sure there's a million. I mean, we could talk about this for hours.
Oh yeah, no doubt. And I could definitely dig in and talk about it for hours, like you say. So, but on the track side, you know, the thing about the tracks being over puffed up and stuff like that, it seems like we are in a long-standing tug of war between the, you know, progression and the kind of novice beginner level, where we have to fill the funnel with lots and lots and lots of beginners in order to have them drip down and, you know, yield out, you know, experts and then into, you know, pros, people who are interested in, mm-hmm. you know, something bigger, the Olympics or what have you. But, you know, I think that there may be a time at some point where we will have to make the decision of splitting off, you know, two different classifications of tracks. You know, I mean, we can right now, I don't think there's anybody in the United States.
That's too much money, don't you think?
I don't know. I mean, it's if it meant doubling or 5X-ing the size of the sport, is it a good investment? You know, I mean, let's put it this way: a beginner level track, and I was told this by a track builder. If you put it on an unused piece of municipal land, could be built for under $20,000. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that is not a lot mm-hmm. of money. And so, you know, it's an opportunity for, like, you know, hey, right here in my own hometown, we don't have a track. The closest one is 42 miles away. So mm-hmm. there's a ton of communities around mine that to say we could go and we could recruit in and say, come on over to the Elmhurst BMX track. It's beginner friendly. Sure. And then when you get those beginners out at the track, then they're going to progress to the point where they're not interested in the beginner track anymore. And they want to go mm-hmm. out to Rockford, or they want to go to the Hill, or they want to go to Steel Wheels, all the mm-hmm. great BMX tracks in our area. And those are the progression tracks. So I know it's your interview, and here I am, you know, on the soapbox. But
that's okay.
But yeah. I couldn't help myself.
No, believe me. We could both be on the soapbox on this one. I mean, to me, the changes that I would make in today's modern track is, you know, I do think the hill's pretty high. I don't think we need as many jumps. We've turned, especially with clips and all this other kind of stuff, racing can be at times very follow the leader. And, you know, comparing it back to, you know, some of the old days, and not trying to just preach old school BMX, but, you know, nowadays, you know, there's not as much berm warfare elbowing in a turn as there was.
Right.
You know, you're going in, you're clipped in, you're going into an asphalt turn. Nobody wants to really touch too many. Now, don't get me wrong, there's still some elbows being thrown and people getting hit and stuff like that, but not like it was. And the thing is, you know, especially like a last straightaway, I always think it's kind of odd when there's a million jumps on the last straightaway and everybody is just doing the exact same thing, whether it's pumping, jumping, thing. So everybody's at about the same level of, you know, in their proficiency and stuff, does the same thing. You know, the old guys do the same thing, that over it, roll it. The young kids are still kind of rolling, maybe a few manuals, and the better middle age kids are jumping everything, but they're all doing the exact same thing. So there's very little passing. So all the time that you spend in the gym doing sprint training, all this other kind of stuff, you never get the opportunity to, like, oh, I had a bad gait or this or that. Let's come out of the last turn and pull.
Right, sprint to the finish.
Pedal to the finish line to try to pass somebody, because there's too many jumps, you can't even get three cranks in.
There's jumps on top of jumps now. I mean, like they...
It's too many jumps. It's just, yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I watch some of these tracks now, and I'm like, you know, okay, he took two cranks coming out of the turn, and then he didn't pedal again until he took one crank going into the next turn. But the whole straightaway, it was just... Now, watching the pros, sure, it's pretty amazing how they get through that.
You bet.
But if you start watching 14 intermediate, you know, even, you know, 12-year-old expert, it's pretty follow the leader, you know? And I think if there was pedaling going on, it would change the spectacular of BMX a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. So if one final point of that three challenges was outreach, and that was sort of the concept of the local track operators and, you know, advocates and so forth going out to evangelize to local businesses, especially the bike shops. What do you think they, you know, some of the solutions on that, like how would they get about that?
Well, like I mentioned, I mean, you know, get involved with the Boy Scouts, bring the Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts out to the track, introducing the new kids. Some of the tracks that are, you know, a lot of dealers that I talk to, also some of them are track directors, and I've listened to successful programs in different parts of the country for, you know, the 30, 40 years I've been in the industry. And I'm like, wow, that really seems to be good. And I wonder why this track pulls 40 motos and the track, you know, down the street pulls 8, you know, and, you know, but they've usually got somebody that has a lot of free time and is involved, because most of the time it's voluntary work or, you know, it's not what they do for a full-time living. So they got to find time to do it. But there's programs where they have a designated local expert, local pro, who every Saturday morning puts on free beginner clinics.
Yeah.
And it can sometimes be a daycare center, but who cares? It brings the kids to the track. It doesn't cost anything. You actually got somebody teaching them the right stuff from the beginning. Everything from bike sizing. I mean, how many 8-year-olds have we seen on a XL 20-inch, you know, with 9-inch handlebars? The kid's got a number plate on his bike. He can't even see where he's going. And, you know, they're set up wrong, you know? So if you've got somebody working with these new kids coming in, good. As far as the sanction bodies go, man, I think we need to do another membership drive. I was a very big part of the NBL with Bring a Buddy program, and I helped design that program. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it was basically a thing like, hey, you brought in your neighbor, your friend, and stuff like this. You kind of accumulated points towards product. So it was kind of like you got like this little catalog or thing like this, and like, man, you could win a free bike at the end of the year. You could win a pair of handlebars or a gift certificate for, you know, towards your race entries or whatever. And it was incentive for the kids to bring their friends into BMX. And, man, it worked for a couple of years. You know, then Bob left and some other stuff happened and it just, you know, it just kind of fell apart. But it was a great program for a couple of years.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I would be remiss if I didn't once again jump on the soapbox a little bit to just drop a plug for BMX Racing League. Obviously, you know, now with that program starting to catch on, tracks should, if they haven't yet, should really give it a look and give Donnie Robinson a call to get him to talk about it with your track. We're bringing those beginners in 30, 40 at a time now. Where before awesome. it was doing something if you had 3 or 4, you know, and so we're bringing them in big quantities. But like you say, you know, keeping them there is the next frontier, and we got to do that. So we got like 5 minutes left on the segment, and so mm-hmm. I want to ask one more question and then give it to you to close it out. But for the tracks out there, in terms of, you know, who you would sell to. Back to that for a quick question. So, like, if a track called you and they needed, you know, they want to buy some parts, you know, like brake cables and inner tubes and stuff like that, both to, they don't have a track vendor, but they want to keep them behind the concessions counter in case someone needs it, or as service items for their loaner bike fleet, because now with BMX Racing League, one of the requirements is you have to have 10, 20 bikes, you know, on hand at all times in order to do the open house events. Is that something that you would consider opening them up as sort of a provisional dealer?
We have done stuff in the past with helmets, to where people have needed, you know, loaner helmets, beginner type helmets and stuff like this. And, you know, we represent two brands. We represent Fly Brand and 7IDP, which is a newer company for BMX. And we have sent those to tracks, usually kind of at a decent price too, you know, to help their beginner programs. And as far as a track wanting to have a pro shop, that's a thing that we take it on a case by case basis. I mean, we had, one, I forget where it was, but I mean, I don't even think we had one dealer in that entire state. It was some weird state that just, there was like no BMX going on at all, but they did have a small track. They pulled, you know, I think, you know, under 10 motos. And there was nowhere to buy BMX. There was nowhere to get a tube or no vendor, no nothing. So we have made exceptions for those kind of guys. Now, if a track has several hardcore bike shops that carry BMX that are customers, well, then, and especially if they vend, well, then there's no need for that.
Yeah,
so
right.
It's case by case with us. You know, we're trying to still protect the IBD as much as we can, but we also want to help the sport grow and people be able to access product. So we have to take it case by case. If it was 20 years ago and not 400 shops carried BMX, but 4,000 shops carried BMX, well, then that wouldn't happen at all.
Right, it wouldn't. We wouldn't have a need for it to happen because it would be well-served, well-covered. So,
yeah.
Cool, man. Well, listen, I'm going to turn it over to you. Anything else you'd like to add to the interview? Tell Announcers Tower listeners, BMX News readers, as we close it out.
Yeah, I just kind of like to tell you a little bit about our house brand, MCS, and the direction that's going for us. We've actually kind of changed direction with that, too. We've been doing kind of a mix of, BMX racing components plus some retro stuff and just a lot of in general fun things. Like I mentioned, those lightning cables, and we've got like colored spokes and things like that. But now with what happened with Western and stuff is right now we're looking at categories on our webpage and stuff, and we're going, okay, aluminum bars, all right, out of all the brands that we carry, who does aluminum bars, and is that enough? So, like, MCS is now going to be making aluminum bars. We're going to be adding and expanding in that line. That will be our house brand. The stuff should be, like, relatively affordable stuff, good quality is kind of what we're going for. And, you know, we're also trying to hope that we pick up a couple more lines. We've got our fingers crossed on HT pedals right now. One other thing I want to put a shout out to my friend over there at Western Power Sports, Ray Hudson. He has been referring us to many dealers to, you know, come check out JD Cycle Supply and, you know, Jeff DeVito for, you know, services and stuff. He's a guy who been doing it a long time and stuff like that. I probably get an email or two from him referring us probably once or twice a week.
That's awesome. Yeah, a true gentleman, you know. I mean, it's like they're out of the business, and instead of just saying, well, you know, people can fend for themselves, he's like saying, look, you know, check out Jeff.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. He's a longtime friend, and, you know, we were competitors and stuff for years, but it was always friendly.
Well, this has been a great, almost hour-long episode, and we've gotten a lot of really, really great insight into, you know, just the backstory of the industry and what's going on and some of the things that you, as someone who's, you know, has long roots in the sport and also on the sales end of things. And so hopefully that we can make this a semi-regular thing where we can, you know, have you jump in and take a little temperature on how things are going out there. Hopefully you'll join us again.
Sure, anytime.
Awesome. So for Jeff DeVito, I'm Mike Carruth. Thanks so much, and we'll catch you next time on Announcers Tower.